Well, we began last week to begin looking at the book of Proverbs. And we were thinking, as we introduced the book last week, about introducing this idea of being wise and how God wants us to walk in a wise way. And in the book of Proverbs, you'll find it's very poetic, as we mentioned last time. And you'll find there's a lot of picture language going on in that. And two of the sort of predominant pictures in these first couple of chapters see wisdom as a person. And you might have noticed that even in the verse we read, sometimes it refers to her. Often she's pictured as a lady, a person you should get to know. That's one of the ways wisdom is pictured. And then wisdom is also pictured as a path that you should travel. And that's the one we're going to pick up this morning in chapters 2 and some in chapter 4. So think about the walk of wisdom. And it's presented to us here in the Bibles as God's word and God's ways, the ways of wisdom being like a path that's laid out before our feet. And yet we need great skill in walking it. And so we're going to think about that analogy, that picture this morning, to think about in a practical way, look at some of the ideas. What do we mean when we're out to go on a walk? How are we going to get to the destination we want? And how that relates to our walk through life. Well, the first thing Solomon, or whoever composed this beginning bit of the book, wants us to know is remember what you've been taught. The time comes when you can walk on your own. Perfect example of it this week was Ethan. I was driving our lot to school, and we're heading out on our own, then up Park Road, and coming the opposite way was Ethan, all on his own. Beaming smile on his face as he was heading to school. But you never did that before to Norbury, did you? Well, Norbury's a lot further. But all the same, before you were, when you were younger, you went with somebody else. And then the time comes when you're allowed to go somewhere on your own. You can have that independence. It's great this morning to have lots of our young people here with us. And yet, as we said, they've sort of graduated from Sunday school and their primary school and things like that. You're growing up. I'm putting in this category of young people now, not children perhaps, young people. And you end up having more freedom to go and say to go on a walk by yourself, to walk to school and things like that. You get more responsibility, more choices as you go through those ways. And Solomon wanted to remind the people he was writing to, and he pictures it like a father writing to his son. That's how it began in chapter 2. Verse 1, my son, if you receive my words, remember what you've been taught. When you were a child, even going for a walk, you held hands. When you were little, you weren't allowed out on your own. You were constantly guided, constantly escorted, constantly with somebody else. You held hands even going down the road, even going to the park, didn't you? And so it was in life. Little children don't have to make big decisions. All the decisions are made for them. Your mum and dad provided for you. They took care of you. They took you to places. They taught you. They were there all the time. And so it is in life. Here the writer of this book, or these chapters, thinks about his own upbringing in chapter 4 and verse 3 and 4. It says, when I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my words, keep my commands and live. The writer of this book, who's now a dad, thinks of the time when he was just a son, just a small child, and how he was taught by his father. And now he says, well, I'm teaching you. And so again in chapter 4, verse 10, he says, hear my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I've taught you the way of wisdom. I have led you in right paths. And that's what this dad can say to his son. I've led you in the right paths. I've taught you the way of wisdom. And perhaps we can reflect upon that this morning. So it was great to have full rows of children at the front. But the children were all here because somebody brought them. Now the children wandered in on their own. They all came because they came with a parent. And as we mentioned last week, the book of Proverbs has so much to teach us parents in the way we bring up our children. And whether we, in a sense, think of them as our children, but whether we're raising them to be God's children. And the father in this chapter can say to his son, I've led you in the right paths. I've led you while you were young in the right path. Can we say that as parents? Is that our aim? Is that what we're endeavouring to do? Especially while the children are very young and our responsibility and we're making decisions and choices for them. Are we leading them in the right path? Are we leading them in the world's ways or in God's ways? So easily to get distracted, isn't it? And to think about, oh, we've got to do the same thing as all the other parents do. We have to have the same priorities. No, we don't. We're raising our children for God. We want them to be God's children. Not just ours. We want them to walk with him. We want to lead them in the right paths. It's our responsibility, isn't it? And then through those things to equip them so they can carry on. For as we were thinking last week, the time of parenting is very short. They soon have their greater freedoms and choices they're going to make. And before too long, they'll be on their own two feet, living their own way, making their own choices. And we want to lead them in the right paths, but also, as it said in chapter 4, verse 10, teach them the way of wisdom. So when we're no longer there to hold their hand, metaphorically, maybe, but we want them to carry on in God's ways. And perhaps we can look back on Christian parents who led us. Perhaps we were privileged to have an upbringing like that when we were taught the ways of wisdom, God's ways. And we should give thanks to God for the diligence of our parents, perhaps, who did that for us. But as we said elsewhere in the book of Proverbs and last week, we said it's not just a book for children and thinking about childhood and things, but the same way, of course, the Bible uses to describe becoming a Christian. And so even if you became a Christian in later life, maybe there was a father-like figure who led you in the right paths. Maybe it wasn't your father, but somebody who took you under their wing and taught you God's ways. And we should be so thankful for those influences we had. So we need to remember what you've been taught and remember those things, because then comes greater independence. As we're saying, we were held somebody's hand when we were little and we were guided so much. But then comes the time to make our own choices, especially for the young people here this morning. The time comes when you can decide things for yourself, make your own choices. As you progress through your teenage years, it's up to you what you want to choose. Get to year 9 and so on, and you're going to choose what subjects you want. It's up to you. You're guided by the school. Your parents might have some ideas for you, but it's up to you to sign up for the ones you want to do, the education you want to pursue, whether you want to head on to sixth form or do an apprenticeship or do all sorts of things. It's up to you. And you have to do it on your own two feet. In the end, you have to go to a job interview. Can't go with mum and dad. Yeah, you have to go. You have to go to a university interview or something like that. You make your own decision. You have to get your own job. You'll have to save up, buy your own car, find somewhere to live and the like. Comes these independence to make your own choices. And the writer here of Proverbs wants to say, remember these right paths now. Carry on in those right paths that you've been taught in this walk of wisdom. Secondly, use your map. If you're going to head out on a walk, you've, in the first place, got to be taught how to walk. Hopefully once that's happened. And then you can go out on a walk. You can go adventuring somewhere in the Peak District or something like that. What do you need to do? Use a map. Use a map. You need to be guided. Otherwise, you're just walking along a footpath, deciding at a whim which way you're meant to turn at each junction you come to, aren't you? You've got to have some plan, some route that you're following, a map. So it is when you're out walking, and so it is in life. How are you going to live your life? How are you going to walk through life? Or is it literally going to be coming up to every single crossroads, every single decision you face in life and going, what now? What shall I do? I've got no clue. There's no plan. There's no route I'm trying to head along. We need wisdom. Just as we would use a map if we're out walking, so we need God's map to live our life. And where will you get your guidance from? Now you're all independent. Now you're grown up. Now it's not mum and dad making decisions for you. They're not there at school with you. They're not going to be there at university or on your job. How are you going to get guidance then? And so we need wisdom. And we need to seek after it. And of course, we find that in God's words. And so in chapter 2, he talked with great earnestness about how important it is to get those things. It began in chapter 2, verse 1. Notice the verbs he uses, the ways he describes it to them. My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commandments within you, incline your ear to wisdom, apply your heart to understanding. Verse 4. If you cry out for discernment, if you lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver, if you search for it like treasure. 8 ways he describes the action we want to have. Very similar, of course, to the words Jesus would use, wouldn't he? When Jesus would talk about ask and it will be given to you, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be opened. Are we seeking after wisdom? Are we determined as we're heading along these pathways through life, as we're facing decisions, are we earnest about getting wisdom? Are we just deciding these things on a whim? Deciding these things, whatever seems best to us in that moment in time? Or are we diligent, like the writer of Proverbs says we need to seek for it. We need to cry out, we need to pray to God for wisdom. As the writer of James would say, if you want wisdom, ask God. He'll give it. Are we treasuring it? Are we searching for it? Do we value wisdom? It implies serious action, doesn't it? We need a map. We need guidance. We need help in living our lives. We need help in making decisions. Do we value the wisdom God gives? We're giving Hannah and Ethan this morning a Bible to take with them. Call it a pocket Bible, as he said, but just as you'd have a map in your pocket when you're out on a walk, so you need a Bible in your pocket. Well, wherever you are. Need it close by. Perhaps you can have one on your phone and the like as well, something even more compact. But you need it there. We need to ask for God. We can pray to God for wisdom in the decisions we have to make. So much there, isn't there, for the young people, but for all of us. Just because we've walked a few paths already doesn't mean we throw caution to the wind and leave the map at home. So it has to be even in older life. Yeah, we may have made an awful lot of decisions. Maybe we made some good ones. But we still need God's guidance in the ones that are to come. Do we value God's word? Is it treasure to us? Is it the one thing we knew we couldn't do without? All the other stuff we have, cluttering up our houses and our shelves and the things we collect and so on. So the one thing I value more than anything else is God's wisdom. Verse 6, chapter 2 this is, for the Lord gives wisdom. Out of his mouth come knowledge and understanding. So use your map. Thirdly then, start well. If you're going to go on a walk, well, it begins by moving your feet. No point just looking at home, sitting at home, perusing over maps, Googling all sorts of different options, seeing the fabulous places to visit in the Peak District. You don't actually begin a walk unless you get off your backside and get off the sofa and put one foot in front of the other. You have to start the walk. You have to begin the walk. And so it is here in the book of Proverbs. We need to start well. If we're going to live our life following God's ways, it has to begin in the right way. And so in chapter 2 and verse 5, he says this, "Then you'll understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God." That, of course, linked to what he said in the previous chapter, chapter 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. How does it begin? How can we begin living our lives in the right way? It begins with putting the right foot forwards. It begins by taking that first step and having that right relationship with God. It begins with the fear of the Lord. That's the beginning of wisdom. And when this wisdom comes to your heart, he begins in those first few verses, verse 5, then you'll understand the fear of the Lord. And so it begins with a fear, by being afraid, scared of God. And there's a place for that. Thinking about God's greatness and God's holiness and his judgment and his anger and his wrath. It often begins in exactly that way, of having that fear, being afraid of living our life completely wrong and ending up facing the terrors of hell. There's something fearful about that, isn't that? And yet it's more than that. It's not just trembling, not just being petrified, but that moves then, as we looked last week, to having a loving fear of God, an affectionate reverence for God. Some people are afraid and then they try and put that out of their mind. We're told in James that even the demons shudder to think about God. Even the demons have a fear of God, but that, you know, they shudder, they're afraid, they're terrified. And then they're not actually going to do anything with that. They're going to still carry on disobeying him. But that fear we have of God doesn't drive us away, but what a Christian does, they've experienced that, but they've learnt this wisdom, they've understood, they've found the knowledge of God there, verse 5. They've discovered more of what God teaches. They've learned about his love and his forgiveness that he offers, his grace, his salvation that he offers. That's what a Christian does. And so they have a fear of God, yes, but a love for him that he should send Jesus. They're afraid of punishment, yes, but they realize that Jesus has taken the punishment. And so they're so happy to know that. And so they humbly trust in God, knowing that God is always right and God is holy and God knows what is best. And so they want to happily obey him and live in his ways. And that leads to a caution. When you're out walking, you need to be careful. You can't be a right idiot, because you're going to end up hurting yourself. Getting on a trail through the Peak District, so many dangers. You could break your leg, you could get lost, all sorts of things. You need to be careful, you need to be thinking. And so it is. As Christians, we want to live our lives, we want to be careful, we want to be cautious. We know there's dangers out there. We don't want to grieve God. We don't want to sin. We don't want to break our leg, metaphorically as it were, as we're walking with God and do these things. We want to live in his ways. So we need to start well. We need to be thinking about those things that he tells us. Chapter 2, verse 6, "For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding." Verse 9, "Then you'll understand righteousness and justice, equity and every good path." If we begin in the right way, if we start with that fear of the Lord, he gives wisdom to his children. We ask for it. He gives it. God is not slow in giving wisdom. He'll help us. And then he says, well, he'll help us understand what's right and what's just, what's fair and what's good. The good paths that he lays before us. Fourthly, if we're going to have this walk of wisdom, you need to keep your bearings. You need to head the right way. You can head out on a path, on a route, with your map, but you need a compass too. You need something that's going to show you which way you're facing, which direction you're pointing. You need to know where you want to go. You need to have some idea of where the route is taking you. Are you heading upward? Are you heading northwards? You know, where are you going on this route? You need something that won't fail you. That even when you're confused, even when you've turned around so many times, you're actually no longer sure which was the way I came and which was the way I was going. I'm a bit confused. Now, we need something that will show us the right way, even when we're a bit perplexed. So we need a compass if we're out walking. And in life, we need God's wisdom to know our bearing, to know our priorities, to know what's right, what marks out the path ahead as the right one, even though we're confused and feeling dizzy and we're pulled in this way, that and the other by different temptations and the way our body and mind feels about things. We need those priorities, don't we? And so he says in chapter 4, verse 5, get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her. She will preserve you. Love her and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. In all your getting, get understanding. That's a graphic word. A strong way of labouring his point, isn't it? Wisdom is the principal thing. The one thing we need, like a compass that points north, is wisdom. In all your getting, get understanding. Isn't that a good motto? Isn't that a good motto to have written on your credit card? In all you're getting, in all the things you're using this to buy stuff, in all of the things you're accumulating, get understanding, says the writer. Know your priority. In all the clutter, in all the things going on round, know what is the most important thing. Verse 8, chapter 4, this is still, exalt her and she will promote you. She'll bring you honour when you embrace her. She'll place on your head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory she will deliver to you. This is the value of wisdom, the splendour of it. Then in verse 13, take firm hold of instruction. Do not let go. Keep her, for she is your life. What's the one thing in life you couldn't do without? Well, the writer of Proverbs says it's wisdom. She's your life. Keep her. Take hold of it. Don't let go. This is the one thing you need. Your priorities need to be following God's ways. Treasure that wisdom up in your heart. Chapter 2, verse 10, when wisdom enters your heart and knowledge is pleasant to your soul, discretion will preserve you and understanding will keep you. Keep your bearings. In all the confusion of life, know where you're going. Know what your priority is. Follow in God's ways. Fifthly, if you're going to complete your walk that you've headed off on, you've got up off the sofa, you've put your best foot forward, you've got your map and your compass, well, you have to carry on walking. There's no other option. Especially once you've headed off one of the roads and so on, you've headed off down a little path through the Peak District, that's it. Unless you walk on, there is no other option. No one's going to come and pick you up in the middle of nowhere. You need to keep walking. And so there is that momentum to the way he talks about these things as well. Chapter 4, verse 20. My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to all their flesh. Keep them. Keep this wisdom. Don't just get wisdom. Don't just think to ourselves, well, I need wisdom as I'm starting life. No, no, we who are older and well past starting, we need more wisdom in carrying on. Don't stop. Don't let it depart. Don't rest on your laurels thinking, yeah, I became a Christian a long time ago. I've done pretty well so far. No, no, keep on. Don't let it depart. Keep it in the midst of your heart. They're right at the forefront of your thinking and your mind. And he warns us then about what we should do. Verse 23 here in chapter 4. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. Guard your heart. Guard your heart, he says. That's where your life comes from. You're not just talking about the bit that pumps blood around. You're talking about your soul. Everything about you, the core of your person. Guard it. Be careful. It says in verse 24, put away from you a deceitful mouth and put perverse lips far from you. Control your lips. Any of you remember the very a little Sunday school song you perhaps learned as a very little child? Be careful, little lips, what you say. Be careful, little lips, what you say. There's a Father up above and he's looking down in love, so be careful, little lips, what you say. And then went on, be careful, little hands, what you do, and so on. But do you remember? What do we think about? There's a Father up above. He's looking down in love. That's the fear of the Lord. Being cautious, being careful, wanting to live in his ways, in the Father who loved us and gave his Son to die for us. There's a Father looking down in love. Be careful, little lips, what you say. Control your lips. Be careful not to be deceiving, crooked, lying in your ways. Carries on, verse 25. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Let your eyelids look right before you. Protect your eyes. Be careful what you're looking at. All those things you see around you. Well, there's some, if you know it's there, you shouldn't look. Be careful what you see, because you can't unsee something you've already seen, can you? Some things we've seen are printed indelibly in our minds. Maybe they fade after time, but protect what you see. Be careful what you look at. Verse 26, ponder the path of your feet. Let all your ways be established. Be careful of your feet. If you're walking, you've got to keep looking down. Make sure you're not going to fall over a root or trip over a big rock or whatever it is. Be careful with your feet. Look in front of where you're going. Think about what you're doing in all of these things. Think about where you're going. I'm talking to the young people about the freedom you have. Yeah, you can walk home from school on your own. It can be arranged. You can go to a friend's house. You can go to the movie. You can do all sorts of things. But be careful where you go. Make good choices about the places you should go. No, there's some places you shouldn't. Stay on the path. Verse 27, do not turn to the right or the left. Remove your foot from evil. Sometimes you might put your foot up, but about to take a step, remove your foot from evil. You're about to head down a wrong path. Remove your foot. Move your foot back. Don't turn to the right or the left. Stay on the path. And with eye to that, he wants to warn us about the wrong paths. Avoiding the wrong paths. There in that verse we just read, chapter 4, verse 27. Do not turn to the right or the left. There's no good shortcuts or detours. When you're out on a walk, journeying through the Peak District, maybe there are. But sometimes they can go pretty wrong. But in life, there's not. One of the things we're tempted is that perhaps we've been living in the Christian way, we've been living God's ways, but the devil tempts us. There's something you're missing out on. Something good that exists outside of that. You've been following God, but you've been restricting yourself to all the fun you could have had. Just take a little detour. There's something much more exciting you could enjoy. That's the way the devil tempts us. But there are no good shortcuts. He says, don't turn to the right or the left. There are no better options out there. However the devil tempts us, there is nothing you're missing out on by following God. Isn't that something we need to be reminded of? Because the devil tells us the opposite. There is nothing good you're missing out on by following God. God's ways are the best ways. And so we need to head on that right path. It says, chapter 4, verse 14, do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it. Pass on. It's pretty abrupt, isn't it? How many times does he need to tell us the same thing? Don't go there. Avoid it. No good will come of it. Stay away from that path. It's like walking along a path, and you see, and you might pass a fence and there's no access. Don't go in here. Trespassers will be shot. It's like that in our walk through life. You'd be aware of the warning signs God gives us either side of the path that we're travelling. He tells us in verse 18, still in chapter 4, but the path of the just is like the shining sun that shines ever brighter into the perfect day. But the way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. The word he uses there is utter darkness. It's the same word that's used of the plague in Exodus, where God sends a darkness so dark it can be felt, they say, in Exodus. The way of the wicked is utter darkness. So don't go there. Back in chapter 2, he warns about two particular dangers. He talks about the path that we should be treading. And in chapter 2, verse 12, he says, I'm doing this to deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things, from those who leave the paths of uprightness and walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perversity of the wicked, whose ways are crooked and are devious in their paths. The dad is saying to his son, be careful. You're going to meet people along the way, and they're going to point out a new path that you could tread. You're going to meet people who are going to introduce you to the ways of evil. They'll encourage you to be crooked, the word is. Maybe sort of a wheeler-dealer, you know, sort of idea. A schemer. Somebody who's twisted, somebody who's into gambling or crooked or a con man. He promises, oh, there's a shortcut. You can twist the system. You can get great gain out of this. He promises wealth. He promises pleasure. But these are dark paths, says verse 13. It's the way of darkness. He warns us about these wrong paths. There'll be people who encourage you to be greedy, devious, engage in all of these different things. He says, my son, avoid it. I'm telling you this so you could avoid it. He carries on with another danger in verse 16. I'm telling you these things to deliver you from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. A house leads down to death and her path to the dead. None who go to her return, nor do they regain the paths of life. He warns his son about somebody who will tempt him in a very different direction. You'll meet people along the way who will encourage you to be immoral. The book is focused on a dad teaching his son. So he teaches his son about men he'll meet who want him to be devious and greedy and the like. And he's teaching his son about women he'll meet who want him to be immoral. Those on the same, those same sex, those of the opposite sex. You can turn it around, of course. If you're female, you may find of your own sex, other ladies who will encourage you more in those ways. But it might be a man who encourages you into immorality and so on, of course. And that's why he puts it out in that way, because he's teaching his son. But he says, be careful of those, especially those of the opposite sex, who will encourage us into immorality. They'll be flattering. They might make you feel good when you hear those words of flattery. Somebody trying to seduce you, says. But she's forsaken the companion of her youth. She's forgotten her covenant. She's committing adultery. She's divorced or whatever. The one she should be married to. Be careful of those dangers. You'll meet those kind of dangers. You young people, as you grow up, you'll meet those kind of people. Perhaps people of the same sex who are encouraging you to do one thing. And then people of the opposite sex who encourage you especially in the realm of immorality. And yet, he warns them there. Her house leads down to death, her paths to the dead. None who go to her return, nor do they regain the paths of life. Unless there's repentance, those paths lead to darkness. Once we've headed off from God's ways and headed out into the ways of sin, those paths lead to the dead. It may start with the excitement of flattery and some attention from somebody of the opposite sex, but it leads to a cemetery. It leads to hell. Unless you repent from them. There's no other way off that path. It's a path that's heading to disaster and destruction. Avoid the wrong paths. And then lastly, stick to the good path. If we're going to avoid those wrong paths that lead to darkness, well then stick, he says, to the good path. And in chapter 3, he says, happy the man who finds wisdom. Verse 17, her ways are ways of pleasantness and her paths are paths of peace. She's a tree of life. God's ways are the best. There's a good path that's a path of pleasantness and peace, and it's a path that leads to the tree of life. That, of course, is a picture of Genesis, where the tree of life was, and a picture of Revelation, where you'll find the same tree of life. It's a path. God's ways lead to heaven, lead to paradise, lead to being with God. As Jesus himself would say, there's a narrow road that leads to life. Same phrase. God's ways are the best. God's ways are for our good. And it leads to life. It's a path of life. It's also the path of light. Chapter 4, verse 18. The path of the just is like the shining sun that shines ever brighter unto the perfect day. What poetry. That's an amazing phrase. Shouldn't that be written on the bathroom mirror, wherever it is you look first in the morning? The path of the just. God's ways are heading into perfect day. It's the walk in the light, as we're told so many times in Ephesians, places like walk in the light. Walk in God's ways. It's the path that gets brighter and brighter, whereas we head to heaven, to the light of heaven. On the path, chapter 2, verse 7, he's a shield around those who walk uprightly. He guards the paths of justice. He preserves the way of his saints. We're guided and guarded by God on those paths. Chapter 2, verse 11, discretion will preserve you. Understanding will keep you. We're guarded, guided on God's path. And so we carry on. We carry on the path. Chapter 4, verse 10, hear my son and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I've taught you the ways of wisdom. I've led you in the right paths. Remember what we've been taught. They said, then when you walk, your steps will not be hindered. When you run, you will not stumble. Carry on in those good paths. Keep going, because it's the path that leads to life. It won't be easy. It is a good path, but it won't always be simple. It is a path of pleasantness and peace, but that doesn't mean there's no problems along the way. God guides us and God keeps us. He'll guide us along the way. And then when you walk, carry on going. Your steps will not be hindered. When you run, you'll not stumble. What it means is we'll never make a mistake, but we'll keep on going. Rachel was looking around Hannah's school at the beginning of the week and said there was a great poster up on the wall. It said, practice makes, not perfect, but progress. Practice makes progress in our Christian lives. Walking with God, it won't be perfect. Not until we reach heaven. But practice keeping going will make progress. We want to carry on the path. Even when we stumble a bit and so on, we're not stopping. We carry on moving along the path because it's the good path that leads to life. It is the path of wisdom. And so, look back. See, I want to encourage people, as we look at the book of Proverbs, just to read back through these things. Perhaps look at it on Monday morning. Read a bit on Monday morning, a bit on Tuesday. Think about this walk of wisdom that we've been considering from chapters 2 and 4. That we might walk in God's ways, avoiding those wrong ways. Remembering what we've been taught. Carrying on that good path that heads to life. Let's finish with our last hymn, 757. Jesus, I have promised